All it would take was a shove, she told herself. He was standing right there, smirking at her with those fat worm lips. You could do it, she told herself. You could do it right now. It wouldn't even matter if she went over with him. It wouldn't matter at all. Here, girl. Sandor Clegane knelt before her, between her and Joffrey. With a delicacy surprising in such a big man, he dabbed at the blood welling from her broken lip. The moment was gone. Sansa lowered her eyes. Thank you, she said when he was done. She was a good girl, and always remembered her courtesies. Daenerys. Wings shadowed her fevered dreams. You don't want to wake the dragon, do you? She was walking down a long hall beneath high stone arches. She could not look behind her, must not look behind her. There was a door ahead of her, tiny with distance, but even from afar she saw it was painted red. She walked faster, and her bare feet left bloody footprints on the stone. You don't want to wake the dragon, do you? She saw sunlight on the Dothraki Sea, the living plain, rich with smells of earth and death. Wind stirred the grasses, and they rippled like water. Drogo held her in strong arms, and his hand stroked her sex, and opened her, and woke that sweet wetness that was his alone. And the stars smiled down at them, stars in a daylight sky. Home, she whispered, as he entered her and filled her with his seed. But suddenly the stars were gone, and across the blue sky swept the great wings, and the world took flame. Don't want to wake the dragon, do you? Ser Jorah's face was drawn and sorrowful. Rhaegar was the last dragon, he told her. He warmed translucent hands over a glowing brazier where stone eggs smoldered red as coals. One moment he was there, and the next he was fading, his flesh colourless, less substantial than the wind. The last dragon, he whispered, thin as a wisp, and was gone. She felt the dark behind her, and the red door seemed farther away than ever. Don't want to wake the dragon, do you? Viserys stood before her, screaming, The dragon does not beg, slut! You do not command the dragon, I am the dragon, and I will be crowned! The molten gold trickled down his face like wax, burning deep channels in his flesh. I am the dragon, and I will be crowned, he shrieked, and his fingers snapped like snakes, biting at her nipples, pinching, twisting, even as his eyes burst and ran like jelly down seared and blackened cheeks. Don't want to wake the dragon. The red door was so far ahead of her, and she could feel the icy breath behind, sweeping up on her. If it caught her, she would die a death that was more than death. Howling forever alone in the darkness, she began to run. Don't want to wake the dragon. She could feel the heat inside her, a terrible burning in her womb. Her son was tall and proud, with Drogo's copper skin and her own silver-gold hair, violet eyes shaped like almonds. And he smiled for her, and began to lift his hand toward hers. But when he opened his mouth, the fire poured out. She saw his heart burning through his chest, and in an instant he was gone, consumed like a moth by a candle, turned to ash. She wept for her child, the promise of a sweet mouth on her breast, but her tears turned to steam as they touched her skin. Want to wake the dragon? Ghosts lined the hallway, dressed in the faded raiment of kings. In their hands were swords of pale fire. They had hair of silver, and hair of gold, and hair of platinum white, and their eyes were opal and amethyst, tourmaline and jade. Faster, they cried, faster, faster! She raised her feet, melting the stone wherever they touched. Faster! The ghost cried as one, and she screamed and threw herself forward. A great knife of pain ripped down her back, and she felt her skin tear open, and smelled the stench of burning blood, and saw the shadow of wings. And Daenerys Targaryen flew. Wake the dragon! The door loomed before her, the red door so close, so close. The hall was a blur around her, the coal receding behind. And now the stone was gone, and she flew across the Dothraki Sea, high and higher, the green rippling beneath. And all that lived and breathed fled in terror from the shadow of her wings. She could smell home. She could see it, there, just beyond that door, green fields and great stone houses and arms to keep her warm there. She threw open the door, the dragon, and saw her brother Rhaegar, mounted on a stallion as black as his armor. Fire glimmered red through the narrow eye-slit of his helm. "The last dragon," Ser Jorah's voice whispered faintly. "The last. The last." Danny lifted his polished black visor. The face within was her own. After that, for a long time, there was only pain, the fire within her, and the whispering of stars. She woke to the taste of ashes. "No," she moaned, "no, please." Khaleesi, Jiqui hovered over her, a frightened doe. The tent was drenched in shadow, still and close. Flakes of ash drifted upward from a brazier, and Danny followed them with her eyes through the smoke hole above. "Flying," she thought. "I had wings. I was flying." But it was only a dream. "Help me," she whispered, struggling to rise. "Bring me." Her voice was raw as a wound, and she could not think what she wanted. Why did she hurt so much? It was as if her body had been torn to pieces and remade from the scraps. "I want—" "Yes, Khaleesi." Quick as that, Jiqui was gone, bolting from the tent, shouting. Danny needed something, someone, what? It was important, she knew. It was the only thing in the world that mattered. She rolled onto her side and got an elbow under her, fighting the blanket tangled about her legs. It was so hard to move. The world swam dizzily. "I have to." They found her on the carpet, crawling toward her dragon eggs. Ser Jorah Mormont lifted her in his arms and carried her back to her sleeping silks, while she struggled feebly against him. Over his shoulder she saw her three handmaids, Jogo, with his little wisp of moustache, and the flat, broad face of Miramaz Dur. "I must," she tried to tell them. "I have to." "Sleep, princess," Ser Jorah said. "No," Danny said. "Please, please." "Yes." He covered her with silk, though she was burning. "Sleep and grow strong again, Khaleesi. Come back to us." And then Miramaz Dur was there, the Meiji, tipping a cup against her lips. She tasted sour milk, and something else, something thick and bitter. Warm liquid ran down her chin. Somehow she swallowed. The tent grew dimmer, and sleep took her again. This time she did not dream. She floated, serene and at peace, on a black sea that knew no shore. After a time, a night, a day, a year, she could not say, she woke again. The tent was dark, its silken walls flapping like wings when the wind gusted outside. This time Danny did not attempt to rise. "Ire," she called. "Jiqui, Doria." They were there at once. "My throat is dry," she said, "so dry." And they brought her water. It was warm and flat, yet Danny drank it eagerly and sent Jiqui for more. Eerie dampened a soft cloth and stroked her brow. "I have been sick," Danny said. The Dothraki girl nodded. "How long?" The cloth was soothing, but Eerie seemed so sad it frightened her. "Long," she whispered. When Jiqui returned with more water, Miramar's door came with her, eyes heavy from sleep.
"Drink,"
she said, lifting Danny's head to the cup once more, but this time it was only wine. Sweet, sweet wine. Danny drank and lay back, listening to the soft sounds of her own breathing. She could feel the heaviness in her limbs, as sleep crept in and filled her up once more. "Bring me," she murmured, her voice slurred and drowsy. "Bring. I want to hold."
"Yes?" the Magi asked. "What is it you wish, Khaleesi?"
"Bring me egg. Dragon's egg, please." Her lashes turned to lead, and she was too weary to hold them up. When she woke the third time, a shaft of golden sunlight was pouring through the smoke hole of the tent, and her arms were wrapped around a dragon's egg. It was the pale one, its scales the color of buttercream. Vain were the walls of gold and bronze, and Danny could feel the heat of it. Beneath her bed silks, a fine sheen of perspiration covered her bare skin. Dragon dew, she thought. Her fingers trailed lightly across the surface of the shell, tracing the wisps of gold, and deep in the stone she felt something twist and stretch in response. It did not frighten her. All her fear was gone, burned away. Danny touched her brow. Under the film of sweat, her skin was cool to the touch, her fever gone. She made herself sit. There was a moment of dizziness and the deep ache between her thighs, yet she felt strong. Her maids came running at the sound of her voice. "Water," she told them. "A flagon of water, cold as you can find it, and fruit, I think. Dates."
"As you say, Khaleesi."
"I want Sir Jorah," she said, standing. Jiqui brought a sand-silk robe and draped it over her shoulders, "and a warm bath, and Miramar's door, and—" Memory came back to her, all at once, and she faltered. "Khal Drogo," she forced herself to say, watching their faces with dread. "Is he—" "The Khal lives," Ira answered quietly, yet Danny saw a darkness in her eyes when she said the words, and no sooner had she spoken than she rushed away to fetch water. She turned to Doria. "Tell me."
I shall bring Sir Jorah," the Lysine girl said, bowing her head and fleeing the tent.
Jiqui would have run as well, but Danny caught her by the wrist and held her captive. "What is it? I must know. Drogo and my child." Why had she not remembered the child until now? "My son, Rago, where is he? I want him." Her handmaiden lowered her eyes.
"The boy, he did not live, Khaleesi."
Her face was a frightened whisper. Danny released her wrist. "My son is dead," she thought, as Jiqui left the tent. She had known somehow. She had known since she woke the first time to Jiqui's tears. No, she had known before she woke. Her dream came back to her, sudden and vivid, and she remembered the tall man with the copper skin and the long silver-gold braid bursting into flame. She should weep, she knew, yet her eyes were dry as ash. She had wept in her dream, and the tears had turned to steam on her cheeks. "All the grief has been burned out of me," she told herself. She felt sad, and yet she could feel Rago receding from her, as if he had never been. Sir Jorah and Miramar's door entered a few moments later, and found Danny standing over the other dragon's eggs.
the two still in their chest. It seemed to her that they felt as hot as the one she had slept with, which was passing strange. "Sir Jorah, come here," she said. She took his hand and placed it on the black egg with the scarlet swirls. "What do you feel?"
"Shell, hard as rock."
The knight was wary.
"Scales."
"Heat?"
"No, cold stone."
He took his hand away.
"Princess, are you well? Should you be up, weak as you are?"
"Weak? I am strong, Jorah." To please him, she reclined on a pile of cushions. "Tell me how my child died."
"He never lived, my princess. The women say..."
He faltered, and Danny saw how the flesh hung loose on him, and the way he limped when he moved. "Tell me. Tell me what the women say." He turned his face away. His eyes were haunted.
"They say the child was..."
She waited, but Sir Jorah could not say it. His face grew dark with shame. He looked half a corpse himself.
"Monstrous,"
Miramaz Dur finished for him. The knight was a powerful man, yet Danny understood in that moment that the Magi was stronger and crueler and infinitely more dangerous.
"Twisted. I drew him forth myself. He was scaled like a lizard, blind, with the stub of a tail and small leather wings like the wings of a bat. When I touched him, the flesh sloughed off the bone, and inside he was full of grave worms and the stink of corruption. He had been dead for years."
Darkness, Danny thought, the terrible darkness sweeping up behind to devour her. If she looked back, she was lost. "My son was alive and strong when Sir Jorah carried me into this tent," she said. "I could feel him kicking, fighting to be born."
"That may be as it may be," answered Miramaz Dur. "Yet the creature that came forth from your womb was as I said. Death was in that tent, Khaleesi."
"Only shadows," Sir Jorah husked,
but Danny could hear the doubt in his voice.
"I saw, Meji, I saw you alone, dancing with the shadows."
"The grave casts long shadows, Iron Lord," Miri said. "Long and dark, and in the end, no light can hold them back."
Sir Jorah had killed her son, Danny knew. He'd done what he did for love and loyalty. Yet he had carried her into a place no living man should go, and fed her baby to the darkness. He knew it too. The grey face, the hollow eyes, the limp. "The shadows have touched you too, Sir Jorah," she told him. The knight made no reply. Danny turned to the god's wife. "You warned me that only death could pay for life. I thought you meant the horse."
"No,"
Miramaz Dur said.
"That was a lie you told yourself. You knew the price."
"Had she? Had she? If I look back, I'm lost." "The price was paid," Danny said. "The horse, my child, Quaro, Kotho, Hago, Kaholo. The price was paid, and paid, and paid." She rose from her cushions. "Where is Khal Drogo? Show him to me. God's wife, Meiji, blood mange, whatever you are, show me Khal Drogo. Show me what I bought with my son's life."
"As you command, Khaleesi," the old woman said. "Come, I will take you to him."
Danny was weaker than she knew. Sir Jorah slipped an arm around her and helped her stand.
"A time and office later, my princess," he said quietly.
"I would see him now, Sir Jorah." After the dimness of the tent, the world outside was blinding bright. The sun burned like molten gold, and the land was seared and empty. Her handmaids waited with fruit and wine and water, and Jogo moved close to help Sir Jorah support her. Ego and Rakaro stood behind. The glare of sun on sand made it hard to see more, until Danny raised her hand to shade her eyes. She saw the ashes of a fire, a few score horses milling listlessly and searching for a bite of grass, a scattering of tents and bedrolls. A small crowd of children had gathered to watch her, and beyond she glimpsed women going about their work, and withered old men staring at the flat blue sky with tired eyes, swatting feebly at blood flies. A count might show 100 people, no more. Where the other 40,000 had made their camp, only the wind and dust live now. "Drogo's Khalasar is gone," she said. "A Karl who cannot ride is no Karl," said Jogo. "The Dothraki follow only the strong," Ser Jorah said. "I'm sorry, my princess, there was no way to hold them. Ko Pono left first, naming himself Karl Pono, and many followed him. Jago was not long to do the same. The rest slipped away night by night in large bands and small. There are a dozen new Khalasars on the Dothraki Sea, where once there was only Drogo's."
"The old remain," said Aego, "the frightened, the weak, and the sick. And we who swore we remain."
"They took Khal Drogo's herds, Khaleesi," Rakaro said. "We were too few to stop them. It is the right of the strong to take from the weak. They took many slaves as well, the Khals and yours. Yet they left some few."
"Iroa?" asked Danny, remembering the frightened child she had saved outside the city of the Lamb Men.
"Mago seized her, who is Karl Jago's blood rider now," said Jogo. "He mounted her high and low and gave her to his Karl, and Jago gave her to his other blood riders. They were six. When they were done with her, they cut her throat. It was her fight, Khaleesi," said Aego.
"If I look back, I'm lost."
"It was a cruel fate," Danny said, "yet not so cruel as Mago's will be, I promise you that, by the old gods and the new, by the lamb god and the horse god and every god that lives. I swear it by the mother of mountains and the womb of the world. Before I am done with them, Mago and Kojako will plead for the mercy they showed Iroa."
The Dothraki exchanged uncertain glances. Khaleesi, the handmaid Iri, explained, as if to a child,
"Jako is a Karl now, with 20,000 riders at his back."
She lifted her head. "And I am Daenerys Stormborn, Daenerys of House Targaryen, of the blood of Aegon the Conqueror, and Maegor the Cruel, and old Valyria before them. I am the dragon's daughter, and I swear to you, these men will die screaming. Now bring me to Khal Drogo."
He was lying on the bare, red earth, staring up at the sun. A dozen blood flies had settled on his body, though he did not seem to feel them. Danny brushed them away and knelt beside him. His eyes were wide open, but he did not see, and she knew at once that he was blind. When she whispered his name, he did not seem to hear. The wound on his breast was as healed as it ever would be, the scar that covered it grey and red and hideous.
"Why is he out here alone, in the sun?" she asked him.
"Well, he seemed to like the warmth, princess," Ser Jorah said. "His eyes follow the sun, though he does not see it. He can walk, after a fashion. He will go where you lead him, but no further. He will eat, if you put food in his mouth. Drink if you dribble water on his lips."
Danny kissed her sun and stars gently on the brow, and stood to face Mirror Mazdur.
"Your spells are costly, Meji."
"He lives," said Mirror Mazdur. "You asked for life. You paid for life."
"This is not life. For one who was as Drogo was, his life was laughter, and meat roasting over a fire pit and a horse between his legs. His life was an arrack in his hand, and his bells ringing in his hair as he rode to meet an enemy. His life was his blood riders, and me, and the son I was to give him."
Mirror Mazdur made no reply.
When will he be as he was? Danny demanded.
When the sun rises in the west and sets in the east, said Miramazdor. When the seas go dry and mountains blow in the wind like leaves.